Hey guys, I'm Megan.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is Sinners Among Saints. Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back.
How are you guys? How's everybody? World is great.
Yeah, how's everyone?
I'm good.
I'm good too.
Actually, we were just talking about if we needed to talk about any holidays because we're trying to be good, which
we're trying to be so good. We even looked ahead to see when the second part released so that we didn't miss anything.
Yeah, and I just was, when I clicked on when this one would release, it was... had my physical therapy appointment up there, so it made me just think of this story I was going to tell you really quick. So I was at work the other day, and I was talking to our medical director, and she's like in her 70s, and she has had like some back issues, and anyway, so we've talked about my back lots of times, and so she was like, oh, if you like, you know, how's your back, like, have you done anything? So I told her I finally got my MRI, you know, I have arthritis and like bulging disc and blah blah blah, all the things. And as we're talking, her husband comes up, and his 90. She's his second wife, and he had like a full marriage and like four kids or something before her.
Okay.
And they met, it's like, I don't know, it's just a cute little story. But so he comes up, and she's like, oh, she has back problems. And she's like, he's had back problems. So me and him are like talking about it, you know, like trading stories. And he's so cute. He's a like very well-known allergist.
Okay.
So that's kind of what he does. But so we're talking about
You should ask him about your allergies.
I know,
too.
I should. I really should. But so I was telling him, I'm like, you know, I said back pain is so terrible, and I honestly would rather give birth than have back pain. And he's like, do you have babies? And I said, yeah, I have two kids. And he's like, see, I don't have that comparison, so I don't know. But, you know, like, that's interesting. And I was like, oh, 100%. You know, back pain is just like unrelentless. It's just always there. And I was like, yeah, it's just, it's terrible. And we sort of talking, and then I go into the lab, and they're like, oh, like, you know, smoothing it up. Just me and, you know, a 90-year-old man sharing backstories, like we're on the same level. And I was like, oh, I just don't think of myself as being old yet. Like, to start having like age-related like, problems.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I'm there yet. And then I'm like, I already am like having, you know, like some degeneration and some arthritis, like in my back. I'm like, I could live another 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, I could literally live another 50 years. Like, what will happen? Well, I will be that spine.
Or 60 or 70.
I could be that spine on SpongeBob that gets pushed around by its, like, like its old child that's just in a wheelchair and, like, so decrepit. Because I'm like, I just don't, like, it starts to kind of make you, like, a little scared.
Yeah.
At least for me, it's just, like.
Well, it, like, makes you want to take better care of your body.
Absolutely.
I feel like, as I get older, at least, I'm like, man, I really need to start focusing on certain aspects of my healthcare, because as you get older, it's harder and harder and harder to do.
Well, and he was even saying, he's like, you know, I've learned like over the years that, you know, continuing to move is better, even though sometimes it aggravates it or whatever. He's like, but in the long run, I was like, I do agree. Because with this, like leading up to my MRI and stuff, like my back just was like hurting so bad. I've stopped going to the gym, which is also detrimental because then you just get stiff and I'm not like, you know, my neck is hurting more, like all of these things, but it's like this double-edged sword where it's like, well, I go and then I spend the next 2 or 3 days after the gym being in pain.
Well, hopefully like in physical therapy,
you'll
learn now, like correct ways
and that's
are things to strengthen the muscles rather than aggravate it.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was in my mind was like, I'm not going to go to the gym right now. I'm going to get this MRI, get like everything kind of going, and then I can get back to it and like, you know, learn how to do it the right way. But it's like, you just got to keep moving.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I remember my dad always being like, when he was about our age now, he'd be like, you just got to take care of your back because you never realize like how important it is. And I was like, okay, that's like such an old person thing to say. But it is so true. Like,
it
you
really
have
is.
To take care of your joints because.
Well, and I come from very arthritic, bad back, bad joint. You know, my dad is on disability for that. Like, he's had fused vertebrae. He's, you know, and
yeah.
I always, for with my dad, just assumed like he's 6 foot six and he's not like a like super beanpole kind of guy. Like he, yeah. not that he was overweight at all, but he's just, you know, he has weight on him. He's not like one of those guys that's like super tall and super skinny. So I just assumed it's because he was so freaking tall, like that he had back issues. But, you know, I have lots of people on that side that are like yeah. arthritis and bad joints.
Well, and joints, it's hard because it's like you see a lot of runners and uh-huh. athletes too that it like are so active and they're fit and they're healthy but yep. they have joint pain, and it's because they've overused yep. it. So it's like you have to find this balance uh-huh. of like using things enough,
well, and that's what
versus like not using them
uh-huh.
or not overusing yeah. them. It's
when I look at too, like
balance.
I started dancing at 2 and then I started playing fast pitch softball at 7 and I did all of that stuff for many years. And when we were kids, coaches and people were not as pro taking care of your body.
No.
You have an injury now, like it, you know,
just
my daughter
play through it.
Yeah. My daughter has dance and like she has an injury and they want her to come to practice, but like they want her to heal.
Yeah.
So that she doesn't harm herself moving forward. And right. they want it to be fully healed. They want her to take care of herself. When we were kids, it was like, you're fine. Walk it off. Like, you right. don't even, like, say anything to anybody that you're, like, really that injured. You're like, I'm fine. Like, this is good.
I'm good.
Now at 40, I'm like, I just wonder if, like, and some of the stuff we did in dance was not, like, good for your body. Whereas now they just do stuff a little different, a little more, you know, caring to yeah. how you are. But it's very, it's just been, like, a realization that, like, I am of that age.
Yeah,
I just saw another kid I went to high school with on Facebook that has like testicular cancer or prostate cancer, one of the two. And I was like, man, like we're not old enough for that. And then I'm like, yeah, we are. We're in our 40s. Like,
yeah,
this is so like you all of a sudden you're there and your parents
and
tell you this.
And here's a good PSA because I was talking about this at work. There are so many men who don't realize, but men in their 20s and 30s are the highest likelihood of developing testicular cancer.
Really?
And then at 40, that kind of starts to go down. And by 50, it's almost non-existent. And that's when prostate cancer kicks in.
Okay.
But all of my men in their 20s and 30s should be doing monthly testicle exams. Like an actual good exam.
That's interesting.
Because it is. It's an issue. And a lot of men, like in middle school, they teach us how to do breast exams.
I know.
I remember doing that. And telling them, like, being taught how to do it in the shower and, like, mm-hmm. everyone focusing on that. They don't do that with
They
guys.
Don't at all. I did not. I was never one to do self-exams, though. I was really bad at that. I'm good at going for my appointments every year.
Yeah.
But I'm not good at, like, the self-exams.
Yeah.
And I never have been. And so, I don't know.
It's not even recommended that much anymore.
I feel like my boobs are so lumpy anyway. I'm yeah, like, I don't feel like, these enough. Like, yeah. That's the guy that you're like, you feel these more than I feel these. So right. like, if you feel a weird lump, you just need to let me know.
Exactly.
I'm not squishing them around right. hardly at all. They're just a part of me, but that's interesting. I didn't realize that was so yeah, in such
20s
young
and 30s. Yeah. So
that's scary.
Yeah.
And my dad was saying something like, he was talking about, I called him the other day and we were talking and he was like, you know, well, we have all this cancer in our family, so we need to be careful of this and this. And I was like, everybody has cancer in their family, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever met someone who no one in their family has cancer? Like, it runs in everyone's family. Just depends
especially
on what kind.
Now, yeah.
You know, like, nowadays, yeah, it's like everyone's grandma or aunt or someone's had cancer. It just depends yeah. on what type your family seems to be more prone to. But,
it's
like,
true.
we all have cancer, so.
It's true. Get your screenings, people.
Yeah, yes.
And yep. go in for your annual exams.
Do it, yeah.
Because it doesn't take that much and a lot can be picked up
no.
early on just in like your normal cancer screenings and like blood work.
Well, and I've never been, to me, it's interesting. My sister's kind of a little opposite, but like I've never been afraid to go to the doctor to have them look at something because yeah. I would rather like you tell me if something's wrong early than like me wait forever and then
right.
have it. So I've never been uncomfortable. Like, no, but I'm not like waking up on my pap smear day, like, so excited, but I'm not like dreading it
yes!
either. You know, it's just like, I gotta go do that. And it's not a big deal. And I just go do it. My mammogram that I did, which was, you know, clear, whatever.
Yeah.
The only thing I worried about was I was like, they are undoing my breast lift because they are stretching my boobs
squishing
so
things.
Far. Because it's like, it squishes, but it kind of pulls too. And I was like, I have far too stretchy skin. Like, you are undoing all this money I paid to get these put back in a reasonable place. But
which, by the way, is not really the case.
I hope not, but I felt in that moment, I was like, stop pulling on him so hard. You can squish him all you want, but don't pull him away from my body. I felt like it was like taffy. I was like, no, and they're
I felt like I'd never had that with mine.
It was, yeah, I felt like it was like kind of pulling, and I was just afraid I was gonna like step back and they were gonna be so much longer. I was just gonna be like, no. But I've always just been an advocate for like, just go do it. Just go do it.
Because so many things you want to catch early if you can. It's like, just do it.
With all the shit we have going on in life, let's just take care of ourselves the best we can.
Absolutely.
That way you can never have to miss a true crime story with us. If you're, you know, I mean, I guess either way you can listen to us, but we want you around forever and ever to listen
to us. Forever and ever and ever.
And ever. Yeah. So.
And on that note, I guess we should, because we didn't do this in the other episode, but we should remind everyone up front to please go follow us on Facebook and Instagram, TikTok. We do have a new website, Sinners Among Saints Podcast at Gmail. I mean, that's our email address.
That's our email.
SinnersAmongSaints@gmail.com. But our website is Sinners Among Saints.
I don't actually know if podcast is in the thing.
Oh, I thought it was. Yeah, it is. SinnersAmongSaintsPodcast.com. Yeah. SinnersAmongSaintsPodcast.com.
Oh, yeah, it is. SinnersAmongSaintsPodcast.com. Yes. Go check it out. It's new. We're kind of like, I did play around with some of the colors and I didn't change them back yet just because I was just messing around. So we're still kind of like playing with the website, like just to see what looks the best, but like it's up and it's functioning.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has. Check it out. You can get to our episodes through the website.
Yeah.
So if that's something, you know, you can just go to our website and it says listen here and you can go right to our list of episodes and what our latest one is and all that stuff. So it's cool. It's fun.
Yeah.
If you like us and you want to, you know, give us a little bit of support, check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/sinnersamongsaintspodcast.
Yep.
And you get some cool extra bonus content, and our highest tier gets our after hours show. So yeah, so just go try and support us. Tell all your friends and family,
please. Yeah. And thanks.
We appreciate it.
And then just keep tuning in with us every week.
Absolutely.
And if you have case recommendations, we would love to hear from you. You can message us on any of those things that we just said.
Yes.
And we will give you a shout out for your recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a part two. So if you have not listened to part one, stop right now.
Yes, you have to go back.
Go back and listen to part one or you'll be very confused.
Yes, you'll be super lost. So go back and listen to part one. I'll give you a little recap here, but it will just be a little overview and then we'll jump in and you'll get all the rest of the twisty-turny story. So in the first part, there's a man in the Czech Republic who hooks up a baby monitor and catches a scene from another home of a naked little boy who's tied up, gets the police involved. They find the house. They find that it's this mother who has her kid kind of confined in this room under the stairs. She's obviously arrested. And then she has that little boy and another kid and then the 13-year-old adopted daughter. They're all taken into custody while they're trying to figure stuff out. And while everyone's in custody and they're talking, they start getting some questions about this adopted daughter as to if really she's 13. Is she potentially a grown woman? There's all sorts of speculation and they've done some DNA testing through her adoption process that they now are finding out does not match the DNA that they took from the same person when they took her into the Children's Institute after the home was raided. So now they have DNA from this adopted girl from the institution that they know is hers, but the DNA that's showing up in the court records that was supposed to be hers is not matching. So
her DNA is not 100% bad bitch.
Yeah.
We don't know what her DNA is at this point.
Yeah. No one does.
We don't know who that.
No, and while she's in the institute, she goes missing. And so now she's missing. They just have the two boys, the mom and the mom's sister are in custody. and we're trying to figure out who, where, what, when, and why.
Everything. We're trying to figure out everything.
All of the above.
Because at this point, we know zero.
Yeah.
And we know nothing.
The book that I took most of the information from, just because it being a case from the Czech Republic, is really hard to find information on. So most of this comes from the book. It's called The Kerem Case by Ryan Green. He's a true crime author and has several other books. So it's a pretty quick read and good information. So we're going to jump in. So we left off right at the point where they found out that the DNA did not match Anna. So aside from Katerina and Barbara living together in college, then later working together, the police found another connection between the two women. Barbara was part of a religious sect that was headed by her father named Josef Skrla. This sect was an offshoot of an international religious group known as the Grail Movement.
The Grail Movement?
Yeah, like the Holy Grail, the Grail Movement.
Okay.
Okay. Barbara had converted Katerina to this Grail Movement during their university days. The police began looking into other members of this sect, and they hit a jackpot when the DNA that was taken from the girl in the courtroom matches the daughter of one of the members of the Grail Movement named Viktor Skrla. So his daughter...
So the actual little girl that was adopted matches the DNA of one of these religious members.
Daughters.
Daughters.
Yes. So his daughter had been the one that was presented to the court as Anna.
Okay.
And after they discover this, they're able to take the DNA from Anna that they took from her at the institute and conclude that that DNA is, in fact, the DNA of Barbara Skrlova, a 32-year-old woman.
And how old is Katerina?
She is like,
are they the
around
same
the
age?
Same age? Yeah, because at this point, Clara, who's the youngest, is 29.
So this lady is older than her,
yes,
but pretending to be her 13-year-old adopted daughter.
Yes.
Why?
So this is what I say, like, in the first one, where, like, I don't know why they have Barbara Skrlova's DNA. I don't know where that comes from. Like, do they just all have their DNA in the system? Because as far as we know, she's not, like, been in trouble. She's not been, like, do they take your DNA when you go to college? Like, I don't know why they have
Weird.
Her DNA. But okay. Somehow they have Barbara's DNA. And so once they realize that now... Anna's DNA
didn't...
I wonder
if they were able to collect something, like, after people came forward.
Maybe.
And they were like, hey, this actually looks like our old coworker Barbara.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know why, how
we
they
have... this that was hers.
Yeah, I don't know. But so
that's
they're able...
weird.
They're able to match Barbara's DNA to Anna.
Why is a 32-year-old woman, would you... And Barbara, as far as we know, was not autistic. She was, like, a normal adult...
She's an adult. She's not autistic.
I mean, I don't want to say, I shouldn't have said normal, but I meant like...
She's not autistic, no.
Sorry, that was very, very poorly spoken.
No, and I didn't mean it that way. In my head, I was just like, she's not normal. There's definitely some things wrong with her.
But not
she's
autism.
She's not
mentally handicapped.
No, she's not special needs. She's cuckoo.
Okay.
I think.
So why, as a 30, can you imagine...
No.
As a 32-year-old woman going and living with somebody else and pretending to be a 13-year-old?
Well, and like they said, when the police showed up to raid the house, she was rocking back and forth and babbling to herself and crawling around on all fours.
Yeah, this is so weird.
Like, I can't even... The other day, Nolan was, like, trying to talk like a baby, and I was like, you're 7. I don't want to hear you talk like that anymore.
Knox does that all the time, and like, I'm like, stop, or I'm not talking to you.
Yeah, like, I don't want to hear you, and you're 7.
No,
so,
knock it off.
In my 30s, no, I don't want to do anything close to that at all. I even hate when I had my kids, and they were, like, 2 or 3, and people would talk to them, like, what do you want to drink? You know, like, they talk to them so stupid. I'm like, you can just say, like, hey, what would you like to drink? Like, they're people. You don't need to talk to them like that, because it drives me crazy. So,
okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
So after the boy's liberation, Jakob, the older brother, is taken to the home of one of his caregivers from the institute for, like, lunch and board games. Just trying to, like, kind of, you know, get him out. Because at this point, Andre is still in the hospital. So he's there for a little while, like just, I think he's probably malnourished and whatever. Okay. So they have him there for a while. So Jakob's just kind of at the institute and they're just trying to, you know, let him have a normal life somewhat. And so she notes that Jakob, who's around nine or 10 at this point, has trouble dressing himself, like often putting his clothes on backwards. And she said he was unable to eat without making a substantial mess.
Oh.
So all of the abuse and secrecy that he had to maintain as well had made it so that he had a propensity to lie.
Okay.
So Andre, on the other hand, who's like 7 or 8, had been locked away from the public and never had to really keep secrets because he was just kept in a room. So this left him acting the very opposite of his brother. He was alone for so long that it had left him with like the longing for company. He was super chatty. He was friendly. Aww. He sat in the laps of people, like even ones that he didn't know. He just was like, he was super fascinated with hygiene products, like his toothpaste. Aww. And they'd given him a hairbrush. And I guess he was like, this is so pretty. Like he just like all of the things. He just was like, oh, my God, like this is all so cool and amazing. And
that like breaks my heart. And
then you have Jakob, who's like, don't talk to me. Don't touch me. Like. Like, you know, like very, very, very opposite. They had very different roles in this like lifestyle. Aww. And sad. But the boys both had this weirdly close, like adoration and fondness for Anna. And they believed, like they really believed that she was their sister.
Okay.
And I don't think they necessarily believed that she was their biological sister. Because obviously when she was adopted, like they were several years old at that point. But they believed her to be a 13-year-old girl who their mother adopted.
Okay.
So when the news broke that she...
Well, when she was adopted, Andre probably would have only been like 3, right? They would have been like 3 and 5-ish?
I think she got her around like 2004 or 5. So they would have been like 5 or 6.
And this was in 2007.
And yeah, 2006 was 2006 was when like they like the abuse and stuff started. And she had only been there for a little bit before that.
Okay.
So they were like 6, 7, 8. So they were old enough to like know that wasn't like their biological sister. But when they did find out that she was an imposter and she was not a 13-year-old girl, this sent both of the boys into a deep psychological state for several days.
I can't even imagine.
So this led investigators to wonder if there was a more like sinister relationship between Anna and the boys. Because although the boys had a deep bond with Anna, they did not have the same bond with each other. When Andre was released from the hospital into the care of the institution, they assumed that if this would be like a joyous
like
reunification. But it was far from that. They were very cold and distrusting towards one another. And in the first few days, their interactions would often break out into fights. Through time, they did... they were able to let their walls down and started to have a more warm, loving relationship because they were close before this all happened. They're only 2 years apart. So they, you know, but there's a lot of, anyway. So once liberated, the family had been cut off from seeing the boys, like I said in the first part. These people were eager to be reunited with the boys once all of this kind of broke loose.
Like their grandparents and stuff.
So within a couple of days.
And dad, I guess.
Yeah. So within a couple of days, Andre was visited by his father, grandparents, and his aunt, Gabriella. Andre was elated to see them. He reacted very positively, and the boy's father was more than ready to have his kids back and living with him.
Okay.
He had always kept a room at his place for them, and with all the excitement, he went out and did, like, a redecorating spree to get their rooms ready.
Cute.
So that, like, they would be even more ready for when they came back. But frustratingly, days turned into weeks without the boys being released into his care, and his frustrations grew more and more, with his access being restricted by the institution's rules. His visiting times were heavily restricted, but were placed only on him and not the rest of the family. Radek and Clara's parents went to the courts to try and resolve the issue, but the courts ruled that the decision on when and where to release the boys would be left up to the institution. But they made sure to let them know that this was not a court order giving the institution custody of the boys. But as frustrations grew, the Minister of Social Affairs, whoever this, And I could not tell you what his name was because I listened to it a bunch of times and I couldn't decipher it. So whoever their minister of social affairs was had to come and weigh in. And he stated that with the severity of the case, the parental rights could be waived in the best interest of the children.
What?
The institution allowing access to Raddick and Raddick alone was as a service to him. But when he violated that by bringing other family members in to see the boys, the institution took away the right, took away his rights with the power that they had given, had been given by the courts. They also could not be 100% sure that the other members of the family had not been involved in the case.
True.
So okay. For them, they stated that the boys' behavior when having visits with family made them agitated and relentless. And they would only calm down once everyone left. And people did say, like, this could have very easily been a conditioned behavior.
Yeah.
Put in place by Clara, Katerina, and their accomplices. But the main focus of the institution was the mental well-being of the boys and the boys only. So I can see from both sides, what's happening here. But it would be hard as the dad who did not have anything to do with it to not be allowed to see his kids.
Yeah.
It would be hard.
It would be really hard.
But I understand their side,
and
too.
And really frustrating where he's like, listen, I'm their parent. I just want to take them home.
Yeah.
And, like, have things get back to normalcy for them.
Yeah.
But then them being like, listen.
Yeah. So it was a pretty big...
And that's a hard change for the kids, too. It is. Like, even though they're family and they love them, they don't know them as well anymore because they've been isolated from them.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure it's a lot. Like, you're just ripped away from what you're conditioned to know as normal. And then all of these things, like, comes out that your sister is actually a 32-year-old woman. And,
well, and even though it had been a relatively short amount of time that all of this stuff kind of took place, it was like only about a year. They're so young, and it's so easy to change the complete mindset of a child in that short amount of time. You know what I mean? Even though they'd, like, been with their dad.
And I thought it was longer, because I thought you said they adopted her in, like, 2004.
No, that's
this
just
is
when...
2007, but yeah, it had only been, like, a year.
Yeah, so that was when the grandma had died, but I think it took a while for, like, the whole process to go through for her to get, like, everything moved over.
Okay.
And then the abuse and stuff didn't start until 2006.
Okay.
So they hadn't been, like, you know, this hadn't been going on for several years. It was a relatively short amount of time, but they're also 7 and 9.
Yeah. Like, it's which very... a year is, like, a long time in that.
And once we find out, like, the depth and severity of, like, what they went through is, like, really not okay for little kids. Like, I mean, for anybody, but, like, little kids just more quickly change, like, all of their whole mental beliefs and system. So one big factor was the issue with Anna, and that the grandmother Eliska had testified in her adoption. She was the one that testified under oath of the veracity of her adoption origins. Okay, so you remember, like, during the whole thing, like, they did all the proceedings, and then Eliska gave a testimony under oath of, like, where Anna had come from, where she came from, which obviously was not true. Which meant that at the very least, their grandmother, Eliska, was complicit in the deception of Anna with the court systems and whoever else.
Okay.
Sorry, hitting the wall.
So that makes more sense where they're like, listen.
Yeah, so they're just not sure who has done what, and, like, neither are the cops, right? Like,
police, nobody knows anything.
Yeah,
at this
right
point.
Now they still don't know who all is involved. So, at this point, Eliska is awaiting charges of perjury.
Okay,
so there's that. Then a few weeks later, the court ruled that the institution had gone beyond its limits by banning Raddick's visits completely, stating that it was a gross interference in his parental rights and responsibilities. But the final ruling on exactly who would have custody over the boys would take another 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
4 years?
4 years. And long after all perpetrators were brought to light and convicted.
That's a long time.
It's a long time, yeah. So on June 11th, 2007, Annika Morova was no longer recognized by the government as a person. Now it was known that Anna was actually Barbara. Barbara, as far back as 2003, had been able to fool law enforcement and colleagues, Some even stated that they knew Barbara and Anna at the same time, but still didn't realize that they were one and the same.
Shut up. Like,
so there were some of the coworkers that were like, no, that can't be Barbara, because I met Anna while I was working with Barbara. I don't understand.
What?
I don't understand.
What? Like,
what? I don't know. I don't.
Can you imagine later being like, figuring out that it's the same person, realizing like you were working side by side with this person?
I'm sorry, but
was like, then pretending to be a 13-year-old girl.
If I worked with you, okay, and your work, and I know what you look like when you're at work, and then I went to Joe Blow's house, and you were there, but this time you were dressed in like a little kid's dress and had your hair in braids and had a pair of glasses and a hat on or whatever, I would still know it was you.
Still recognize. Yeah.
I would be like, what the hell's happening? What is going on? Like, there's something wrong with her.
This is so weird.
Yeah. So I don't.
This is so weird.
I don't know how this all happened. But at this point, Barbara herself is still missing. But just days after Annika Morova was stricken from existence, Barbara voluntarily comes out of hiding. Okay. On June 15th, she showed up to the Czech embassy seeking a new passport in Copenhagen, Denmark. 480 miles away from Brno. She showed up with four men. One of them was her father, and another man was a man named Kolinsky was his last name, and he acted as her spokesperson. They stated that there was much more to the story and that people would not be kind to her, and that's why she stayed away as long as she did. Okay. Kolinsky admitted that, yes, she had portrayed herself as Anna, but not for any other reason than she felt more like a child inside and took on this persona in order to be in the skin that she felt the most comfortable in.
Stop. I identify as a 13-year-old girl. Please treat me as such. I mean, I guess it happens all the time,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Nowadays, yeah.
Like those people who identify as babies and want to be like diaper, like their diapers changed and bottle fed.
They identify as animals and you have to let them pee in a litter box. Like,
no.
It's the whole thing. So,
no.
So, yeah.
No.
She wanted to be with the children because she said she felt more accepted and safe. As an adult, she said she was made fun of for acting like a child. And while she sat in the embassy, she continued this ruse by clutching a teddy bear.
Stop it, Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara. If I was at work and my 32-year-old coworker continued to act like a child, I would be like, what is wrong with you? What is happening?
Yeah.
You're a grown woman.
I wouldn't
stop acting like a kid.
I wouldn't make fun of you.
No.
But I would be like, there's something wrong with you.
I would, yeah. I would at least
you need talk professional help.
Yeah. I would go home and be like, my coworker is, there's
something wrong with her. And that's why when your kids identify as an animal and they're not, as a parent, you need to say no.
You know, Lily asked me the other day, she's like, what if I told you like that I, you know, identified as this? And I was like, I would just tell you, no, you don't. Like, I would honestly, I would put you in therapy because you're not an animal.
If my kids came to me and said I identified it as a cat, I'd say, great, we're allergic to cats in this house. You can sleep in the garage and hear some cat food. And I would see how long they lasted.
I was like, I'd put
because
you in therapy.
Because if you're going to identify as that, I'm going to treat you as that.
Yeah. I was like, but you're not an animal. You can identify as whatever you want, but you have to live your life like a normal person. And animals can't have jobs. So
no.
you have to identify as a person. Sorry. Anyway, so she would go on during this time in the embassy between acting like a child and acting like an adult. But it would like kind of switch like back and forth.
Flop.
Kolinsky stated that in her escape from the institution that she had hid in the woods for a while. Before taking a train with no explanation of how she crossed multiple borders without a passport. Though she was all over the news, she was not a wanted person because at this point she hadn't committed any like full crimes. Right? Like they've just found out that she's not who she said she was, but like they don't have anything to hold her on yet.
Right.
So she and her entourage end up leaving. She leaves a DNA sample for them, And then she promises to continue to cooperate with like anything that they need. But then they just like peace out. Okay.
I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall of that embassy just to like hear and see people's reactions while she's there and after.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, while working at the daycare, Barbara realized that she fit in more with the children than she did the adults, and eventually decided to seek help for her confusing feelings. But that did not work, so she apparently tried to go, like, get some professional help.
Okay, good.
But it didn't work, so then she just confided in her friend Katerina, who then agreed to help her assume this new identity, according to her. She stated that the persona of Annika was gone now, but she did refer to herself Barbara in the third person, indicating that there was some sort of dissociation. So if you remember too, in that letter that she supposedly wrote before, it was using all male pronouns.
Yeah.
So there's something
in there. She doesn't know who she is.
No. And obviously, like, if you are a grown woman and you're trying to portray yourself as a child and you're living, you know, like your life like that, like, there's something that's going on a little heavier than just.
Yeah.
Than just. Absolutely. I don't know. I don't even know what. But
because most of us want to grow up and have like autonomy and like not be told what to do by our parents. At 32, there's no way that I'm identifying as a 13-year-old.
Well, and she wasn't even identifying as like a 13-year-old. She was identifying
just a child.
As a 13-year-old with special needs.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't even, you know, because like, my daughter's 13 and she...
extra attention.
Yeah.
And this is
dabbling
weird.
To herself and carrying around stuffed animals. And, like, it was a very... She wasn't even trying to act like she was 13. So, very, very weird. So Barbara did speak on the confinement of Andre, stating that the day he was found was the first time he'd ever been placed into that room, and it had only been for 2 hours at the most.
Okay.
She stated that after he was disciplined with light corporal punishment, that's when he screamed he was
light
gonna,
corporal yeah. punishment.
That's when he screamed about how he was going to kill people. So his mom placed him in the room, informing him that like that kind of talk would not be tolerated.
I want to know what heavy corporal punishment is in their mind if they're burning these kids with cigarettes and scratching them with forks.
Yeah. And like, I'm sorry, Barbara,
what
but
part of that is light?
Then who's been shitting all over the floor and throwing up all over in that room?
Yeah.
If no one's ever been in there and that he'd only been in there for 2 hours at the most.
Yeah, no.
Okay. So the people who were helping Barbara thought like her coming forward like she did voluntarily showed that she was telling the truth and that she had nothing to do with anything like the abuse, any part of that. Because for her, she said, why if I had been one of the abusers, like would I come forward like voluntarily? But the prosecution saw this very differently. And they stated that while she was posing as a 13-year-old, she was actually a fully grown adult in a home who had a duty to comply with police when they raided the home at the very least and to report what she had witnessed, even if it had only been one time that it had happened.
Yeah.
Police also found that Barbara was a student at a nearby university, but in reality, and I don't know what this purpose was, the picture of the person who had been studying under Barbara's name was Katerina. So I don't understand.
So now Katerina is pretending to be Barbara?
At the university. I don't know why. And it never states, like...
why that is.
Because she already has a degree. Katerina is, like, a social, educational, whatever. Like,
this is the weirdest jam case.
Yeah.
Okay.
But being that this was academic fraud, the university ended up filing a criminal complaint against both women. The institution also filed a criminal complaint on Barbara for illegal impersonation, because they felt that as a fully grown adult woman, and with her possible involvement in the abuse, that she had put the other children within the institution at great risk.
Yeah.
And though she agreed to cooperate, Barbara was refusing to return to Brno for fear that she would be prosecuted for the abuse, even though she claimed innocence. So the police eventually get in touch with Interpol to help get her questioned. So they set up a meeting time for July 13th, but Barbara did not show up. And at that point, the only person they could get in contact with was Barbara's lawyer. But he didn't know where she was. He didn't even know her address. He didn't have a phone number for her. He just could
not. How do you not know where your client is?
He could not help.
Sorry, at I don't all. Know how to reach her. She just calls me.
Yeah. But like what? That he could help in facilitating them getting another meeting via Skype. And that Barbara would be there and that she's still very willing to help.
And he's going to facilitate anyway they need this that, by
he's gonna figure
smoke
it out.
Signals?
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's
what?
Whatever.
Okay.
They're never able, obviously, to get this meeting set up. And then eventually her lawyer is unreachable.
Just disappears.
Disappears.
What the hell is happening? So, like who before, are these people?
Barbara now is once again just gone. This is her second disappearance, and no one can find her. So Josef Skrla.
What was she before this? Just a daycare worker?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like she has some special training in disappearance.
I know. That's like, why I was like,
what is happening?
Yeah, I don't know. Or like if just these countries are, I don't know. I don't understand. Because I feel like it's not as hard to hide around here.
No, I feel like I'm watching The Bourne Identity. Like many more layers.
Yes. So many
like,
more layers.
I don't know what's happening.
Okay. So Josef Skrla, Barbara's father, was an interesting man, to say the least.
Okay.
As a child, he had suffered some sort of a fall and was receiving disability benefits for, like, life. He was, like, functional, but I don't know what had happened. It didn't really, like, go into detail, but apparently he got, like, monthly payments.
Okay.
Okay. So as he got older, he went into business, aka scamming people, and he was very good at it. His business was in some sort of trading that dealt with international intelligence and military goods. And one of his biggest clients was the government of Azerbaijan.
Stop.
Okay. And he once was almost the cause for an international incident when his relationship with them collapsed. And then he threatened to sell the tanks that he was going to sell to them to Armenia, who is a country in which they've had centuries long rivalry with. I don't even know.
This is like so convoluted.
So Skrla was also looked at because, like I said before, he is the leader of this offshoot of the Grail movement.
This is Josef?
Josef Skrla, which is Barbara Skrlova's father.
Okay.
Okay.
There's a lot of people involved in this.
There is. So this is an offshoot of the Grail movement. And as they're looking, they find out that Hanna Basova, Victor Skrla, Barbara, Katerina, and there's a few other people that will come into this, but they're all members of this sect. He had even started a scout group, and not like Boy Scouts. It sounded like it was for like adults, like, I don't know, camping, some sort of a group, like a hiking group or something kind of like that in the 1990s. And every single member of his religious sect had also been a member of this scout group. So it was like his way
of recruiting.
So that's
like where it started.
Yeah. That's how he like recruited.
Okay.
So the Grail movement, I'm not going to get super into it because there's like a bunch of stuff, but it's pretty interesting on its own. It follows the writings of Oscar Ernst Bernhardt and his book that he published in 1926 called In the Light of the Truth. Worldwide, there are about 10,000 members. And the Grail message addresses eternal questions such as, what does it mean to be human? What is the purpose of life on Earth? And what happens after death? The Grail message also addresses the causes and significance of crisis facing humanity and the humanity's responsibility to the future. The movement began in Germany in World War II. Bernhardt, when I can't remember exactly where he was, whatever was annexed, he was like one of the first ones arrested and was not allowed to like do any more of like his teachings or talkings. So it was kind of like the end of that for him, but people were already like his followers. And so they kind of kept it going after the fact. But what I did read about it was he had all these thoughts and ideas and whatever, but he also did not want to be looked at as the center of the movement. And he did not, he like wrote in his books that like he did not want people to like read these and then like interpret it for their selves. Like, he didn't, you know, he didn't want them to take any aspects and make it fit their agenda life or whatever.
Okay.
So it almost seemed like, well, yes, he had these writings and these thoughts and he was having people listen to him or whatever. He also wasn't like your quintessential cult leader, wanted you to follow him. And
where he's
wanted,
like, look at me, look at me.
Yeah, he didn't
I'm
want any of that.
I'm the center of attention. I'm the most important person.
He did think he was like some sort of prophet or some sort of, you know, he did do all of that kind of weird stuff. But he also didn't want people to like fawn over him or make him the reason of this or whatever. So I don't know. Maybe he just had his thoughts and he was like, this is what I think. But like, don't make me a thing.
Okay.
You know. So eventually the boys sat with the investigators and gave all the grisly details of their abuse. So both children stated that prior to the summer of 2006, their mother had never shown any indication of extreme anger or violence, that she was a good, caring, and loving mother. The abuse began so suddenly and so intensely that the boys were thrown into a state of shock.
Aww.
They were taken by their mother, their aunt Katarina, and who they believed at the time to be their sister, Anna, to a cottage in the woods about 30 minutes outside of Brno. Once they arrived there, they were met with Hanna Basova, Jan Skrla, who is Barbara's brother, and Jan Turek, who's just another member of the sect.
Okay.
Jan Turek's job was he rehabilitated aggressive dogs.
Oh, okay.
That would otherwise be put down. That was what his job was.
Okay.
So he was just a member of this movement. The boys who were used to family vacations, that like prior to this, they spent a lot of time in the countryside. They would go do family outings and they didn't think like anything of
this trip. They just think they're going on like a camping trip.
But they soon find out that this would be the beginning of a nightmare. Once everyone arrived at the cottage, the boys were met with two dog cages into which they were placed with absolutely no way to communicate with each other. They were to only eat from dog bowls, and for the next several days were only taken out of their cages to be subjected to extremely cruel violence.
Aww.
The abusers would place a bag over their heads and then beat them with belts and bamboo poles. They would scratch them with forks, put cigarettes out on their groins, and they would pour hot water that was hot enough to cause pain, but not hot enough to leave permanent damage over their stomach. There were also times when Andre's head would be held underwater for extended periods of time.
Why?
The physical abuse was bad, but the psychological abuse was just as bad, if arguably not more damaging. With bags over their heads, they could never see their abusers, but they could hear them as they were screamed at and taunted. They also had loud music blared at them to, like, unsettle them. And then they were often forced to harm one another. So I think this is where, like, they started to have that disconnect as brothers. So essentially, they're even further isolating them from each other. They were forced to dig graves and then lie in them and repeatedly were told that they were dead.
Stop.
Yeah. And for some reason, Andre, like normal, there's always one that gets the brunt of it, took the brunt of the abuse and was forced to endure possibly the most horrific act that was committed during this time at the cottage. One night, Andre was removed from his cage and he was held down so he could not escape, while Clara, his own mother, cut a circular piece of flesh from his buttock as he squirmed and cried. The piece of flesh was then passed around while Andre lay there in pain and crying, and all the adults in the room consumed it.
Stop it.
Nope.
They ate
a part of him. And it,
they just cut a chunk out of his flesh and passed it around?
And ate it. Yep.
While he watched?
Yeah. While he laid there. I mean, I don't know if he watched because they usually put bags over their heads. But while he was in pain and crying and like suffering.
How do you do that to your child?
I don't know. I honestly, especially
when you haven't, like, you've been a normal great mom up until that point, right? And then something just like snapped.
Yeah, it's
what
I get into a little bit, but like I still don't understand it. I really don't. So eventually
they cook the flesh.
Mm-mm.
They just ate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just passed around and ate it. So once they returned home from the cottage, the abuse did continue, but it was at a much lesser intensity. So it was like they, everything was fine. They went to this cottage. It was like so horrific. Then they go back home and like, obviously he's still confined and all of that, but like, there's not the same level of like violent abuse. Kind of weird, but when the summer ended, Jakob returned to school after extensive coaching on what to say and how to act. His demeanor, though, had changed, and people at school did take note. He missed a lot of school and every school outing, plus all swim trips. This was so that no one would ever see him without his clothes on, because now he has scars all over his body. Andre, on the other hand, did not return to school due to a hearing issue. An issue that was never founded when checkups were given to him at the hospital.
So they just lied so they could keep him out of school. Mm-hmm,
she was homeschooling him because he had a hearing issue. But he did not.
Oh, this is like just pure evil.
Yeah. So he spent the rest of 2006 in the basement of the daycare center, chained to a desk and watched by Hanna Basova. Hanna Basova used Andre as a tool to take her anger out on and would frequently beat him when she felt aggravated. He was forced to urinate in a bucket, but was allowed out in the middle of the night to use the bathroom if he had to defecate. Jan Skrla, Barbara's brother, would be the one that sometimes brought him meals, and Jan Turek would sometimes take him out for exercise. Once they rented this home in Kurum and they got there, he was transported to that bathroom and then to the closet under the stairs where he was left until his liberation in 2007. When the story broke into the media, the biggest question, as I think it is with any of these cases that we cover, is why?
Yeah, why?
Why are these kids subjected to such cruel treatment and so suddenly and by their own mother?
I will never understand this.
I will never either.
Never understand as a parent how you want to do harm to your child.
No.
At all. Like, I get sometimes we have to punish our kids, but that really does, like, kill me as a mom.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I hate it.
I hate it, too.
It's the worst part about being a parent. And I've not done anything near this. Like, this is insane.
I feel bad for just yelling at my kids.
Oh, me too.
And then I'm like, I have to, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I shouldn't have lost my temper. I need for you to listen when I'm talking to you. But, you know, yeah,
this is crazy.
I don't care what anybody said about anything or God or anything. I am not going to do harm to my kids.
No.
Sorry. There's no level of brainwashing. I just don't. No. I just honestly don't believe I could do it.
No. Mm-mm.
But there was no doubt that this all somehow tied back to Josef Skrla's Grail sect, as it was facilitated by essentially like all of his members, or some of his members. Everybody that was involved in this case were members of his church.
Okay.
So police start to try and figure it out, and there's three possibilities that they come up with as to why this is going on, because at this point, the people they do have in custody are not saying anything.
Okay. Of course they're not.
No. So one was that the abuse was committed as a way of discipline. Clara and the other abusers use this as a way to train the boys for some misconstrued disobedience. Because I guess there is a teaching within the mainstream Grail movement that states like that you should parent with a firm hand, but nowhere in there does it say you should ostracize and abuse your children. It's not that way, but it does talk about like in order to raise your kids to be good, like obedient, religious, you know, which I think is kind of, not to that extent, but like a lot of religions, like, you know, you raise your kids a certain way to be like a good follower.
Right.
But this was one of those things where they were taking something that was said in this Grail movement book and making it
like way twisting to the extreme.
It, yeah. And then being like, well, this is what it says in the book, which is not.
It's almost like they give it justification for what.
I mean, everyone does that, right? With the Bible, with anything, like they'll read something and then like they, you know, if they're doing something wrong, they can find some way to find something in the Bible that
to justify it,
that they feel like is justifying it. And it's like, no, that's not what that says. Not at all.
No.
So it's believed that Josef and his followers took this message and amplified it to meet their sick desires. And when the story broke into the media, the Grail movement itself was brought into question. And the local sects made sure to let everyone know that they did not associate with Yosef and that he and his followers had been banned from attending like their services when they realized that their ideals were far more radical than the movement was supposed to be. So prior to all of this, they had already been like disassociated from them because they were like, these people are crazy.
And we don't hang out with them.
Like, we don't like them. They're crazy. And we've known that for a while.
Okay.
So another thought was sexual exploitation. And this was due to the evidence that was taken from the home when they raided the house in 2007. The camera that police removed from inside the closet where Andre was contained was of extreme high quality. So high quality, in fact, that there were no vendors within the Czech Republic that even sold anything remotely close to its level of recording. Like, it was just, it would have had to have been imported, and that would cost a lot of money. Clara and Katarina rented three homes. Each woman kept their original homes that they had, plus now this home in Kerem that was rented under Katarina's name. But neither one of the women on paper made anywhere close enough money to maintain all three residents. Clara had been a secretary for a while, but had been unemployed since moving to Kerem, and Katarina managed a daycare, neither being high-paying jobs. So police believe that the camera found in Andre's prison may have been used for nefarious reasons. When they got the camera, there were 3 hours of recorded footage of Andre tied up to a shelf in that room and falling asleep near the end of the video. And they also remembered how naturally he smiled at the camera when police came in to photo the crime scene.
Yeah.
Making them think that he was used to being photographed in that condition and that maybe they were selling videos or streaming live videos for large amounts of money.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah. The fact that they always had their heads covered during the abuse meant that there could also have been people paying top dollar to come in
and be the abusers.
And that with their heads covered, the boys would never be able to identify them.
Oh, that is horrific.
The police also thought that maybe Barbara's acting like a child may have also been like used to make money with pedophiles. And that's why she was behaving the way she was behaving.
Ew.
The third was that they thought possibly somehow the sect was trying to make Barbara into like a new messiah or icon for the faithful to rally around. And this was why the boys had such a close connection to her. Investigators at first thought their bond was just like a familial kind, but over time they began to wonder. The more the boys spoke to investigators about Barbara slash Anna, their adoration seemed far more intense than that of a sibling nature. One of the women who took care of Jakob in the institute recalled him once telling her that Anna was special and that she was chosen by God. But when asked for more details, he stopped talking and told them he couldn't say any more.
Okay.
So every adult relationship they had had within this time was of a manipulative nature. They were isolated from each other. And even though they were so close in age and loved each other very much before the abuse began, they no longer got to see each other. They were isolated from their father and grandparents. These were all people who loved them very much and had been very active in their lives prior to the abuse. And for some time before moving into the home in Kerem, the boys were isolated from Clara, their mother. What? Jakob was watched over by Aunt Katarina, and Andre was kept in the basement being watched over by Hanna Basova. The only person they had a positive relationship with at that time was Barbara in the form of Anna. Their abuse was even centered around Barbara. They would be woken up in the middle of the night and told that Anna was going to receive these lashings or punishments and that they needed, the only way that she would be spared is if they took it for themselves and they would do it without even thinking twice.
Oh, that is terrible.
So they thought that maybe the boys were being conditioned to like become her protectors. And so they were breaking them down until they essentially were just like machines and they would act without thinking or feeling. Aww. And who would be better than two little boys who you could very, very easily mold into becoming essentially like these robot protectors.
Whatever you want them to
of
be.
This religious icon.
Oh, that is so sick.
Weird, huh?
That is so sick.
The last part of 2007 was spent trying to get one of the last ends tied up. With all the suspects in custody, so they've taken in Hanna Basova, Katarina, Clara, Jan Turek, and Jan Skrla. Okay. Those guys have all been taken in because it's all been shown now that they were part of the abuse.
Yeah.
But with all the suspects in custody, none of them were saying anything, and police still had not freaking seen Barbara since she disappeared for a second time that previous August. While her involvement was still unclear as to exactly what she had been a part of, the very least she needed to answer for her deception and for her unwillingness to say anything when witnessing the unrelentless abuse. Yeah, when she
knew what was happening.
Yeah. So shortly after the new year, Barbara shows back up. On January 5th, 2008, a man came into a car rental agency to return a car that he had rented while he was in Oslo. While filling out paperwork, police busted the door and took him into custody at gunpoint. This man's name was Mikael Ria. He was traveling with a 13-year-old boy named Adam, who had been kidnapped from an orphanage in Oslo several weeks prior. This kid was the son of a playwright named Martin Farner, F-A-R-N-E-R. He had relocated from the Czech Republic the previous summer with his family and had been working at a theater in Oslo. When the fall hit, Martin's wife and children had gone back to the Czech Republic, but Adam stayed with his dad and began attending a school in Oslo. He looked and acted like a 13-year-old boy, but some of his teachers did note that he did sometimes look older than his age and that he was very thin with a shaved head and permanent dark circles under his eyes. Mm. He also had signs of mental issues, and he was nervous and hated loud noises. Once they said a teacher burst into the room and like slammed the door and had like a very boisterous like greeting, and this sent Adam into a hysterical breakdown.
Aww.
He also told teachers of disturbing stories about being abused by his father and rented out to older men for sexual purposes. His stories were very detailed, and so teachers brought in psychologists to assess him, and it took a while for them to get enough information out of Adam to then call the authorities and have Martin arrested on suspicion of child abuse and sexual exploitation. At this point, Adam was removed from his father's care and placed in an orphanage. On December 16th, 2007, Adam went out on an outing that was provided by the orphanage when suddenly he ran to a car that had been idling nearby and they sped away. A nationwide search began. 3 days later, Adam and his abductor went to a hotel, and the receptionist had been like the only person in the whole world who wasn't watching the news and seeing that his like picture was literally plastered everywhere. But she said that they did have really strange behavior and that they were holding hands when they came in, and she thought that was kind of weird for a boy of his age to do, like with his dad. And then they asked to use the hotel phone, even though they were physically holding a cell phone with them. Then she said they kept like looking around at stuff, and I guess in the lobby of this hotel there was some like nice paintings or something. So she had like this feeling that maybe they were gonna come back and rob them.
Okay.
So when they left, she called the police and reported them. Now the Farner family had not come to Oslo alone. They had actually traveled there with Mikael Riha. And when they looked into this, they noticed that Riha had taken time off work and rented a car that day that Adam went missing. So employees of this car rental agency, like all over, were alerted because they figured at some point he's going to have to.
So his actual family and Mikael?
Yeah.
Were friends?
Yeah. They like knew each other at least.
Okay.
Okay. And so the police assumed at some point he's going to have to return the car somewhere. So they tell like everybody that works for this like car agency that they're looking for this specific car. Yeah. This person rented.
When they return it.
When they return, you need to tell us. So that's what happens, and the police show up. They're able to arrest Mikael Riha and then take Adam. But when they get to the police station, Adam has something to say, and it's that he is not Adam. He's freaking Barbara Skrlova.
What?
That's been hiding under the identity of a 13-year-old boy.
What?
So when Farner and his family came to Oslo, Helena, his wife, took Barbara slash Adam and enrolled him in a school. And when they asked for his passport, she said that he didn't have one, but she had hers and he was listed on her passport as her dependent because they do have a son named Adam. But he went home with his family to the Czech Republic when they all went back there. And Barbara stayed in Oslo under his identity. Helena also requested he be excused from gym class, so he never had to change clothes in front of anyone at school.
What the fuck is happening?
What? I don't know.
She first pretends to be a 13-year-old girl.
With special needs.
With special needs. Then she runs away from that and pretends to be a 13-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. And people are just like, okay, like, what adults are these that are just like, sure,
does she
I'll pretend that you're my son and enroll you in school?
Yeah.
What is that? And then she comes forward with this crazy story that she's been sold for sex. Like, if you're trying to stay under the radar, why? Why?
Yeah. There's no, I don't think there's any explanation for her ever.
What is happening?
So, her identity now revealed, unlike previous times, this time she had two outstanding arrest warrants in her name, one from the Institute and one from the university in Brno. So, along with Mikhail Rhea, she is arrested and extradited back to the Czech Republic. Martin Farner was interviewed after Barbara's arrest. He did not give a lot of information, only that he did know of her true identity, but not as to why he, like, why she took on his son's identity. He just said that he knew she was scared of something, but he didn't know what it was. So I think he knew her dad.
I'm sorry, but if a 32-year-old woman came to me and was like, hey, can I pretend to be your 13-year-old son because I'm scared of something?
Yeah.
Like, what would you do?
I just wouldn't. I am such a rule follower. I would be so nervous. Like, I just couldn't. I couldn't pull the whole thing off. I'd be like, well, then we need to go to the police.
Well, I sure as shit would just, like, I would just hide you. You don't have to take on the identity of my 13-year-old son. And, like, I'm not going to enroll you in school.
Yeah.
Especially when my real 13-year-old son is back home in school.
Yeah.
Like, what?
And like
why
I said,
don't you just hide out? Why do you have to pretend that you're a 13-year-old boy?
And it's so, like, easily done without having to prove anything.
This is so weird.
I will tell you, I thought it was super weird. So I don't know if you remember, but in 2020, the beginning of the year, when I first was going to move in with Cody, right? So we had kind of moved in, but then I was, like, driving my kids back to school in Syracuse, or Lily, back to school every day, you know?
Yeah.
And but we were, like, kind of fully moving in there, so I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna pull her out. It was like, it was right before they shut schools down for COVID, so COVID had come out, but, like, they hadn't shut anything down yet. But I was like, you know what, like, it's the end of the school year, she's not behind, like, I think this is just a lot of transition, so we're just gonna pull her out of school for the last couple months of this year. I'll just do, like, homeschooling or whatever, and that will be that. And then they shut down schools, and so it wasn't a very big deal anyway. But when I went to the school to tell them I'm taking my child out of public education and I'm going to homeschool them, they said, cool, sign this paper. They didn't ask me to prove that that was my child. They didn't ask if she had another parent that was wondering if I was taking her out of school and potentially running away forever. Like, no questions were asked except for that, like, do you have an ID? Cool, sign this paper. See you later.
What?
And I was like, this is so bizarre. Like, obviously it was very kosher and her dad knew what I was doing, but if you were a parent in a divorce situation and you were trying to run away,
it would have been so easy
for me to just go on the school and be like, hey, like, I'm taking her, we're gonna homeschool, we're moving, whatever. And they just were like, cool story, have a nice day. And I could have ran away with her and no one would have, like, checked.
That is terrifying,
right? And what? Then but then you try to check your kid out for lunch and they're like, we need a full background report.
We need your fingerprints.
Who you are.
And a buckle swab.
Yeah. But you can take your kid out and homeschool them. No problem. Just sign this paper. We'll never see you again. Thank you.
What?
So what I will say, hell? I will say I have experience out where they're just like, eh, whatever. Sounds good.
Perfect.
I just remember, like, walking out with her, like, that was far too easy. Like, I feel like we should run away now just because, like, that was, like, it was so easy.
This is weird.
Yeah, super weird.
The things that you don't, because we are such like rule followers, that you don't really think about until you read cases about this, and then you're like, look back on it, and it's like, man,
yeah,
you could get away with so much shit in our country,
I know,
and in our world, in everything.
I just don't even, I don't even dare.
No,
not a risk taker like that.
Oh man, it's crazy.
Yeah. So when they're talking to Martin Farner, they also ask him if he's part of a cult, which upsets him. And he states that his religion is recognized in many places, and accusing someone of being in a cult was a surefire way to rile up the community and get media attention. Which, I mean, yes, but
true.
You kind of are. So some also, and I don't know what this has to do with anything, but there was also speculation that Jan Skirla had been sexually abusing Barbara, and that Kalinske, her previous spokesperson, who was also a retired police officer.
He was a retired police officer?
Yeah, he was a former police officer. So he said he would not be surprised if it was true. Because he said that in the beginning, like, everything was pretty kosher. And then after being with Josef and Barbara for a while, his, like, police intuitions kicked in. And he said he was very afraid of what Josef and his sect were capable of doing.
Okay, because I was just going to ask, how do you go from being a police officer to this crazy bitch's spokesperson?
And he said that when they first came to him with, like, this outlandish story of what they were going to do, he was like, no, we should just go to the police.
Yeah.
And then they did not, obviously, do that. And that's when he was like, oh, and then he started seeing more and more, and he was just like, I don't know about
these
people.
I feel like Jan had to have done some shit to Barbara.
Something, yeah. There's weird shit going on all around there.
This is weird.
Novak, who's the man representing Jan Skirla, took on Barbara once she was back in Brno as her lawyer, and he immediately tried to get her out on bond, which was denied because she had proven time and time again that she was a huge
flight
risk.
Yeah.
No, she cannot be out on bond.
And she's real good at it.
Yeah. There's no more children she can impersonate. No. So at this point, she still has not been indicted in any of the abuse.
I mean, but on like a weird note, kudos to Barbara for being able to pull off not only a 13-year-old girl,
I'm not good at acting,
but also
like that.
A 13-year-old boy, because
right?
I got carded before I was even 21.
I mean, I just don't think I could have done it. I just suck at that stuff. So good on her for, I mean, she's a master of disguises.
That's
so
nuts.
So in the beginning, when she gets back and is, you know, taken into custody, her mental state was pretty fragile, and she was unable to partake in any form of questioning. But several days later, her mental state did stabilize and she was able to be questioned. At this point, she was no longer acting like a child, but claimed that she had been a victim as well. At first, they believed that this could be true because she did have injuries that did not look self-inflicted.
Okay.
Barbara only cooperated, though, for a short time before she started becoming very vague and then was no longer helpful. So at this point, the court ordered a 2-month-long mental health evaluation. And up to this point, Clara had stood her ground that Anna was not Barbara. But once, like, her true identity came out and there was no question, Clara finally decided to talk, and she did tell investigators that Anna had participated in some of the abuse. She stated that at the cottage, Anna was the one who held Andre's head underwater, and that she and Jakob were also forced to beat Andre on some occasions. And so after this, Barbara was finally charged with child abuse charges. Now, once she was charged, she was once again ready to cooperate.
How did Clara, just to like back up slightly, how is she going to say, oh, I didn't know that this wasn't Anna?
She tries to claim, like, severe brainwashing, essentially.
Because when shit starts to come out, then it's nobody's fault, right?
And she's just like, I don't know.
You're all victims.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now Barbara's ready to cooperate again, but her testimony is very different. Now she claims that becoming Anna was not voluntary, was not to become the person she always felt she was, and that Katerina had not been a wonderful friend who had helped her fulfill her internal needs. She said through physical and psychological abuse, as well as drugs, the Morova sisters had forced her into the role of Anna. She said Hanna Basova was one of the ringleaders, being told by her that she had a bad attitude that needed to be changed. She said she was given drugs so much that she didn't remember much and it was all hazy. But she seems to remember plenty. So.
Yeah, it seems like you have a pretty damn good recollection to me.
She said that she'd been being abused for years prior to the boys entering the picture, and that all of the abuse she did to them was only because if she didn't comply, it would be her that received the punishment. She said that she had been sold to evil men who do ugly things to children, that she was blindfolded and assaulted on many occasions, and there was apparently some dude who paid a lot of money named Hansen that would come and, like, rape her. It was, like, his thing. During the raid, she said she was instructed to do whatever possible to keep investigators from looking at her body so they didn't see the scars. And that while she could not name the men who helped her escape, there were two of them. And once she made it to Denmark, she met her father and then went off to meet the Farner family. And that's when she was forced to take on his son's identity, but was also still forced to service clients. And that's why when she was finally arrested, she gave up her identity without question. So, it's believable.
Yeah, I was going to say, part of this seems real, really, really true. Yeah. And, like, makes you feel bad for her because, yeah. It seems kind of legit.
But at the same time, too, like, I just don't know if I could beat children. I would probably just take it myself. I don't know, but I don't know. I've never been in that situation. I will never be, so.
Well, and who knows what her childhood held as well.
Oh,
and like
for sure.
What brainwashing went into stuff in her formative years.
I mean, just from what I've seen so far, like I'm sure some shit's been happening for a while. That's why she's so like confused about who she is, where she is. Like, I just think there's a lot going on there.
And to have been sold to many men, I can't even fathom that. Or to be, you know, pretend to be a 13-year-old and then have somebody come in and rape you knowing or thinking that you're a child.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
And you having to take on that persona.
Yeah.
It's gross.
And pretending to enjoy what you're...
No.
Yeah. It's terrible. The Morova sisters, Hanna Basova and Jan Skrla, were facing up to 12 years for deprivation of liberty of minors and the abuse of persons entrusted in their care, while Barbara and Jan Turek faced up to 8 years for aggravated cruelty. Katerina and Barbara were also charged with malicious damage to the reputation of the Brno's Institute for Children because of Anna. But in the end, they were acquitted of those charges from the Institute because Katerina and Barbara's deception with Anna had begun long before the Institute was involved, and it had not been done with the intention of deceiving the institution.
Okay.
Plus, the courts said that the institution should have done a medical examination like they were supposed to when she arrived, and they would have probably uncovered all of that in the beginning, and they would have never been put in the limelight the way that they were. So they had a responsibility to do what they should have done. They didn't, and so they ended up being acquitted.
Okay.
After the mental evaluation is complete with Barbara, they determine that she is mentally stable enough to stand trial, that she knew what she was doing, and that while, yes, like, there are some mental health issues, she willfully deceived Clara and knew exactly what she was doing and therefore must stand trial for her actions or lack thereof.
She willfully deceived Clara?
I guess so. So
wait,
I don't know if Clara really was trying to think that this girl, like,
Clara didn't adopt this 13-year-old?
Yeah, so.
And didn't know it was Barbara?
To help out. And so, in some of the, like, the story's so convoluted, and I feel like people within the story tell different stories at different times as well. But at one point, it's like, Katerina kind of came to her and was like, I don't even know, like, telling her about these kids that needed adopted. Anyway, so Then she gets Anna, and then Katarina starts like giving Clara instructions on things to do, like to the boys and all of that kind of stuff, through this person who she calls the doctor, who was no one but Katarina and Hanna Basova.
Oh my word.
But it's all also tied back to the Grail Movement sect.
How is Katarina so evil? Like,
she's a cult member.
She could do this to her nephews.
Right? And her sister, who's obviously like vulnerable.
What is to happening? Some extent.
So on June 17th, 2008, the trial finally took place. Prosecutor Zamorovkova, sure, stated, quote, as a consequence, the boys suffer from mood disorder, various phobias, sleep impairment, growth regression, and emotional deprivation disorder, all of which have permanent consequences upon them. Clara stated, quote, I agree largely with the indictment. Yes, I know I hurt my children, but I never intended to. Horrible things were happening then, and I do not understand how I could let it all happen.
Yeah, we don't either.
Yeah, and she was, like, crying in court, and it was this whole, like, I don't know, blah, 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 kind of a thing.
I feel like this always happens at the end of, like, culty cases. Yep. Where
they
it's do like, that.
It's like they come out and they're like, I don't know how it all happened.
I was brainwashed. I'm a victim too. And it's like, you never know what to believe.
Yeah.
It's because so part hard. Of it, it's like, were they? Like, well, did they really not understand like what was happening?
Well, there's one of the like bigger podcasts I listened to did like a case recently on kind of talking about cults a little bit. And they do talk in there that like, while a lot of people in cults are like, well put together, intelligent human beings, they're also very vulnerable people in one way or another. And so they're targeted because they are more vulnerable. And I am just too like, you're freaking weird. Don't talk to me. And like, no, I'm not going to listen to you because you're an idiot. Like, I just don't have that. I really don't. I've never been like a follower. Even as a kid, I was like, fine, you don't want to be friends with me. Like, don't be friends with me. I don't care.
Right.
And just move about my day. And so, but there's these people that are vulnerable, and I can't identify with it at all. And so I don't, in my mind, it's like there is no possible way that anybody could come to me and be like, you need to start beating your children because they're misbehaving. And it's like, well, but they're not misbehaving,
right?
And but they are, so you have to,
so you need to do this. And I'd be like, okay,
sure, sounds good, dude.
No,
yeah, whatever, get out of here. And I don't care if you said God is telling you, then you and God go have a nice life together. Like, I guess I'll just cut like, all ties with God and whatever. Like, I just I like, just there's just no weird. Way
no there's no way.
And I'm sorry if like that's mean to, I don't know, anybody who might be an ex-cult follower, I don't know, but I just can't, I can't get behind it, sorry. So the trial took about 6 weeks, and in the end Clara was sentenced to 9 years, Katarina 10 years, Barbara and her brother Jan Skrla 5 years, while Hanna Basova and Jan Turek both received sentences of 7 years, all in maximum security prisons. I could not find any information on who actually gained final custody of the boys.
Okay.
As of December 2008, it said, the only article I could find said the courts were going to rule soon. But I could never find anything like on the article, or you know how sometimes at the bottom of the articles it'll have like related or like other, and I could, nothing would ever go past that point. And those court proceedings for the custody of the children were not public, so they were given, information was given out after the fact.
Okay.
So I don't know if they ended up maybe even ruling like that they didn't want people to know, because it had been such a big deal that they didn't want to know, like people to know them, where they were.
Yeah, keep them
so
private.
I'm hoping that they're with their father, because he did seem like he was a good person and a good dad and really loved them. But obviously at this point it's 2024, so everyone's been paroled, and it didn't, I could never find like any information as to where they are. I don't know that I would want Clara to see her kids, but I don't know. Like, I just, I don't know.
Yeah, this is,
I don't know.
Like, I don't, I like when we have like the resolution that they're just in prison forever.
Yeah.
When they get out, then I never know how to feel about it.
Right. Well, like, Clara got 9 years, and she was like 31 or so when it happened. So it's like she's our age and just gets out of prison.
Just gets to go live her life.
Yeah. And I don't know, for me, like in these kind of cases, I'm like, she deserves way more than 9 years.
Yeah.
Way more. Like, I don't feel like that's long enough.
Because those kids are going to suffer their entire
forever.
Life.
Forever.
Their entire life. They'll have
changed their whole
because of
course.
This. Yeah.
Like, I just, for me, it's like,
no, you
are out there, like, intentionally harming children. Like, you deserve way more than 9 years.
And you're dealing with, like, their psyche.
That's what I said in that one, like, part where it's like, the physical damage is awful, the abuse. Yeah. But psychological could arguably be far more damaging, because the physical part goes away eventually, for the most part. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you have
scars.
Like,
you heal from the pain of that.
But you heal from that. But, like, psychologically, you will never fully heal. It's always, always, always there.
No.
Always a reminder. Always.
And the trust, like, issues that you must have after that.
Oh, my
and,
God.
Like, just the PTSD and, like.
Just to have that. Your parents are supposed to be the ones who protect you and love you and care for you.
Yeah.
And are your foundation, and to have that taken away, I just feel like, just like, think of my own kids, and it's like, that would be really devastating on
absolutely,
like, Nolan being the same age as Andre, if I just all of a sudden started like beating him, like in that horrific of a way, like it would completely damage him as a person, like completely.
No,
like, and he's such a funny, sweet, like, fun kid to have, and it would absolutely just devastate his heart.
It would change
to
him.
Go through that.
Yeah.
And I just can't. There's nothing you could tell me that my kid was doing that I would do that.
No. If
he had such terrible, like, behavioral issues, then, like, at the very worst, it would be like, well, then I guess we need to find you, like, a home, like, an institution where people can help you. With doctors and psychologists. Like,
right.
I'm not going to put you in a cage and beat you. And
beat you.
Eat flesh. And eat your flesh. And, like, drown you. And all of these horrific things.
No.
Like, in the name of God. Like, why do people... In what world do people think that that is how God is treating people? Is by, like...
I don't know. I don't know where all of these messages get, like,
either.
So... mixed and convoluted, and it's just, it's so bizarre to me.
It really is.
It's
me too.
So bizarre.
Yep. Like, if that's
this
you...
is why cults are just so interesting, though, because they can make, like, seemingly normal people who
absolutely
people, you know, it's always like, yeah, they were great parents, they were great employees, they were these great humans, and then all of a sudden they joined this religion and poof, like, everything in their life changes.
It would be so hard for me, though, like, just thinking of being erratic, and, like, you had this spouse and this mother of your children, and everything was great, and you thought she was a great mom, and then all this happens. I would sit there and be like, I had no idea who she was. Like, this is who she's always been.
Yeah.
And it just took time for it to come out. Like, for me, it wouldn't just be like, oh, she was brainwashed, part of a religious sect. It would just be like, no, this is who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And what is happening? Like, it'd be so confusing. So I can't even imagine how our kids feel.
No. I can't either.
It's just... Yeah.
Nope.
All right. That is the Kerem case. I've never heard of it. It's very twisty.
Either.
There's, you know, it was... Hopefully I kept it straight enough. It's kind of hard, but there's a lot of, like...
No, I felt like you did a good job because there was, like, a lot of people in that one.
Yeah.
And I followed it for the most part.
Yeah, it was interesting, that's for sure. So,
good job.
Thanks.
All right, well, let's do our soul cleanse.
Soul cleanse.
Okay, so I found this that happened in March, and I thought it was a good thing to highlight as we're coming into the summer months, because it has to do with a big donation for the Utah Food Bank. And I feel like a lot of kids, you know, they get free breakfast, free lunch from school, and then summer hits, and they do, like, a free lunch program for school.
They do it where I am, too.
I don't know if you've ever gone to those, but they're not, like, great food, and there's not a lot of food.
Ours is just the sack lunches, and they actually give them out right on our corner.
Oh, that's nice.
And so, but our kids don't like, because we have food, so I don't have them go get free lunch, you know? Yeah. But I do know what's in them because they tell us.
Yeah.
But you don't get free dinner.
No, or breakfast. And so a lot of kids especially rely on the food bank when they don't have enough food.
Yeah.
And so I think people always try and donate a lot of stuff like this around the holidays. But we kind of forget those summer months. So I thought this one was a good one to highlight. And this was, it was a partnership with the Utah Pork Producers Association. And they partnered with Daly's Premium Meats, the Utah State University Athletics, and Brigham Young University Athletics. And they came up with this thing called Points for Protein, where basically the they would donate 25 pounds of pork for every point the USU and BYU football team scored in this last recent season. And so it ended up being 35,000 pounds of pork. So that was like bacon and other pork products that all came from Daly's Premium Meats.
I wonder if they, I guess they probably look at past seasons and kind of calculate how much.
How much?
Could you imagine, like, what if they were just like, that is so, that's a lot of, I don't know if we have 35,000, but I'm sure they probably like calculated other seasons and were like, okay, we probably will donate between this much and this much for each point. And so they picked their number, you know, we can go up to this amount or whatever, but that's so much pork.
Yeah, so much pork.
So much.
And this company, the Daly's Premium Meats that supplied it, isn't even a Utah company.
Oh, they're not?
They're not a Utah company. Oh. But they said that we were really involved with the community here and in the area, and we love the people of Utah. So we're just really happy to help support those in need.
That's awesome.
We recognize the need, and we want to do what we can to be a positive influence in the community.
I love that, because, like, being a child who was raised very poor, I never had bacon when I was a kid, like, very rarely. Like, I didn't get stuff like that. Like, it was frozen, you know, boxed, like, hamburger helper.
Exactly.
Tuna and mac and cheese.
And that's actually what this, like, it goes on to say, families facing food insecurity or other economic hardships often struggle with getting enough protein in their diet due to high cost of meat products.
Yeah.
With beef prices in particular increasing following COVID-19. The donation of pork products made through the Points for Protein fundraising initiative will be split into 140,000 servings that will go to families in need. Oftentimes it is like you donate. I mean, I'm guilty of this because I never know what to donate, right? They always just say non-perishable food.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely.
And so it's like, and we did some fundraising for the food bank around the holidays for my work. And someone brought up the fact that, like, if you give them a box of hamburger helper, right? They still have to go buy the hamburger. So they're like, try and include full meals that families can get, because if they get a box of something that calls for butter, like even mac and cheese, right? Then you have to have butter and milk, and if they don't have that, then they can't make that meal.
And it's hard. Like, I don't know like the stipulations for each one of these programs, you know, but you have like WIC, which that was something my mom did have a lot when I was younger, and I think it's if you have kids that are like 6 and under or something. So you get like the cheese and the milk and the eggs and like cereal,
there's
formula and like stuff like that that you can get. And it's good freaking, like, the WIC approved cheese is so freaking good.
Yeah.
Like, it's really good. I remember, like, getting it as a kid. But, you know, then once I got a little bit older, we didn't have that kind of stuff. And then I do remember my mom having to go to the food bank, and I was an adult, but my sister was still at home, but she was older. So, like, the stuff that she would get at the food bank at that point was then, like, a bunch of cakes and pies and stuff, because they're giving like whatever nutritious food they do have to like the younger families.
Kids.
But it's like there are people who are in need that are older too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And being able to just like have some of this is so cool.
And if you don't know what to donate, you can actually give a cash donation. So whatever you would normally like, you know, spend to donate whatever you were going to donate, you can actually just give that, and then they'll go purchase things like peanut butter is a great option, things that don't require other ingredients that people can make full meals yeah. with. And they and the employees are great to work with, and they know like what they need
yeah.
or what they have excess of. Yeah. And so
and I've always,
you can just donate money if that's something.
Yeah. Well, I'm always like been an advocate for like the poor people because I grew up poor. Yeah, my mom was too. One of them. She was a single mom.
Me too.
Like I get that. I have also been like more on the side of like, you know, I've also had family members who are on drugs that use their food stamps solely for that and not, you know, for the correct purposes. But I cannot imagine right now what it's like to be a single mom, to try and pay rent. And I know there's tons of programs, and Utah is pretty good at trying to make programs available, but they also get bogged down because yeah. there's a lot of people in need. But the food prices, like it's even really, just for so us, high. Our neighbor came over yesterday while I was outside doing some stuff, and he's a retired guy. He made like prosthetic limbs.
Oh, cool.
That was what his job was. Like, and he's really nice. And so he always brings our garbage cans in. But yesterday it was a nice day and I was outside and I was doing stuff. And while I was out there, he came and like was bringing in my garbage cans. I was like, I can do that. Like, I was going to do it when I was done with this. And he's like, no, this is my old man job. Got to find stuff to do. Like, that's he's so retired. Nice. Like, he's super nice. But we were talking and he even said, like, I can't imagine. He's like, groceries for me for a week is like, you know, over $100. Like, I can't imagine like what it is for you. With, you know, we have six people in the house.
Yeah.
And maybe not full time, but like my kids are there all week. They only are really gone Saturday.
Yeah.
The only day they don't eat at my house is Saturday.
Yeah.
And so it's like groceries for us. And I'm buying like way bare minimum than I used to. You know, I used to stock up on stuff all the time. Like just yeah. whatever, every week I'd get the same things. And now it's like, nope, I'm waiting until it's like out. And then we'll stock up because it's so expensive.
It's so expensive.
So I cannot imagine. And then it's like, if you are a single mom and you're working, they're like, well, sorry, you don't qualify for food stamps because you're too rich.
Yeah. I run into that at my work all the time where people are like,
why does that person get punished?
I make too much, but I literally can't afford to feed my family.
But if you don't work, just don't have a job, then they're like, here's all the benefits.
Exactly.
But if you're working and like trying, it's like, sorry, you can't have any.
Right.
It's hard. And so this is cool. And I love that it's a meat that they can like use for, you know, even like a roast, like for some of these families could be a couple of meals.
Yeah.
You know,
and like a treat, honestly, because they probably don't get those things very often.
Right.
So
having eggs and bacon for breakfast is probably like so cool, you know, because they don't always get to have that. So that's really, really cool.
Really
and
good. Yeah.
With like they said, with the amount, the cost that meat is now to donate that amount is huge.
That's huge.
Because that's a lot of money that they're missing out on.
It is.
You know, with a donation.
35,000 pounds.
I can't even. I would have loved to see
that. Which, what's the average pork price today?
I would love to see like that. Do they take it all to like, is there just one big food bank place they take it to?
And then
they
like distribute
it out? Because can you imagine like seeing that come in?
No.
Like. That is insane.
So depending on what cut you get, it says it's anywhere from like 3 to 5. So let's just do 4.
Yeah.
Right? 35,000 pounds times $4. That's $140,000.
That's
$140,000 worth of meat.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
And like so cool.
And amazing. Yeah. So.
Thanks, Dailies.
Yes, thanks, Dailies. And that's so awesome. Support their company if you're out grocery shopping.
Absolutely.
And are wondering what kind of meat to buy and you see Dailies, purchase Dailies.
Absolutely.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And they're supporting a community that they're not even like
a part of. Yeah, that's so awesome.
Which I think is amazing. And good job to the athletic team for scoring so many points. So keep that up too.
Yeah, they scored combined 1750. Like,
that's awesome.
1,750 points. So good job, guys.
Yes.
You helped, too.
Woohoo!
All right.
Remember to go follow us on all of the things. Mm-hmm. Go give us a 5-star review and click that automatic subscribe or download button.
Yes.
Tell all of your family and friends about us. And anything else?
No, I don't think
Any last words for the week?
Nope. Just love us and listen and follow. Listen.
Yes. And remember to keep listening if you want in on the sin.
Bye, guys.
Bye.